Aaron Hill, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, gents.
Pleasure to have you. So we always start our podcast off the same way. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
Yeah, good question. So the problem I solve is helping create space for people to create impact and change. And that can look like many different things, usually along the lines of refocus, realignment, and recharging themselves. And who I am, well, I'd throw that back to you. Say, what do you want to know a bit about me, or who I feel like I am? Because for me, it's two different things.
I think it's probably been a journey for you with everything that I've read and watched of yours. So I'd probably want to know who you feel like you are.
Yeah, love it. So yeah, I'm a powerful, loving, courageous father. And I happen to be called Aaron. I happen to live in Barcelona. And once upon a time, I was in the military, which is quite interesting for people. So I think that's a good way for me in this moment in time to wrap both in there.
Good, good. Okay. So going back to the problem that you solve, if someone's just tuned into this, and let's imagine you were a doctor and they're the potential patient, what symptoms might they be feeling that make it worthwhile staying tuned in for the rest of the episode?
Yeah. So they'll probably be feeling like they're stuck or they're overwhelmed or that something's getting too much for them. They're starting to doubt or question themselves. You know, what they've done for so long is feels like it's getting heavier and heavier. And they take it very, very personal. And what that looks like slightly from the outside then is the perspective starts to shut down and they don't explore as much. They're not open to seeing or looking or listening or learning. And they start to become slightly more entrenched in their thinking. So yeah, stress, pressure, isolation, frustration, anger, all the good human stuff.
All the good stuff. It's great to have you on the podcast. I've been really looking forward to this one. So like, I always think of, people don't prepare enough. What I find is people wait until it rains and then they run out and buy an umbrella. Whereas it actually, have you got a lifeboat and an umbrella at home for when the floods come? So when you think about people getting ready for challenging situations, what steps would you guide them towards? What things do you do? Do you have a bit of a premeditated plan? If I know that in 2 hours time, I've got to have a challenging conversation with Zach about something in business. What could that look like?
Yeah. So I think something that goes back to my early military days is we were taught that the basics done well is the foundation of everything. So that's something that speaks to me and I've heard repeated over the years, you know, from professional sports to successful business people, it's they do certain things, their own basics, very, very well repeatedly. For me, I talk a lot about resilience, and that's the ability to come back from a challenge, not necessarily to grind through it or be unbreakable, but it's how do we learn and adapt when we come back. And one of those things is to keep that resilience topped up. There's certain things that I do, and definitely I help my clients look at as well, is what are your basics? What do you need to do well for you, for your family, for your business? And how often can you keep those buckets topped up? So that might look like rest and recovery. For me, I consider one of those to be consumption. What are the things that I'm putting in my body? Does it help me? Might it hinder me? And it's not, there's no judgment. But yeah, maybe as an extreme example, 5 pints of beer for breakfast might not serve you. And 0.5 liter of water might serve you. And it goes all the way through. So movement doesn't have to be exercise, but it can be some sort of stretching or just a walk. And yeah, so I've got 5 or 6 categories, and those are the first couple that I'd help. Yeah, people look at what are you doing to support yourself before the challenge arrives, so that you're pouring from the fullest cup possible when you confront this challenge or situation.
I like that. I like that a lot. And then, So for someone like yourself, Aaron, I imagined you're incredibly disciplined, you're incredibly focused, you've been doing it for so long that actually the morning routine, you probably don't have to think about it. But there are probably certain people that don't have those, I need to drink water. How do people implement those things? Like what are some of the things to get get the ball rolling? Is it like setting rules, goals, tasks, reminders? What do people do that's tangible?
Yeah, so there's some great books out there, like Atomic Habits is one that leaps straight to mind with some really actionable things. But I think for me, if I was to wind it back and look at myself, because everybody's different, everybody's needs different things. But it's really creating something that I need and want first thing in the morning. So whatever comes along, I've done something that I want, which is usually along the lines of a cup of tea, and I've done a couple of things which I need for me personally. I think it's James Clear talks about habit stacking. So when you're doing one thing, tag one small thing onto it afterwards. If you are having the coffee, then maybe you have a bit of water before the coffee. And that might include a stretch as well. I don't know. It's so varied. But I think the biggest thing, there's two things here. There's, first of all, I am human. I make lots of mistakes. I'm not always disciplined. The routine, the basics, not always go all out the window, but some of them fall off. That's life. We've all got kids here as we speak, and we can all attest to that. And the second thing is to start off really small and really simple, almost like set yourself up for success. Don't make it a £5,000 investment to buy an ice bath and start getting up at 4:30 if that's not what you've experimented with, not what you know you like or need. Start off real, real simple. Keep it simple.
One of the other things that you see a lot of people struggling with, particularly on LinkedIn, you don't have to spend more than 3 minutes on it to see someone talking about imposter syndrome. And I imagine people you've helped probably in your own life, in your own career, this has maybe snuck in. So I can't really think of anyone better to ask about imposter syndrome. So where do we start? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So it's really interesting. Once upon a time, I would have said, yeah, I had imposter syndrome. And now I almost phrase it as, yes, I'm human. You know, it's even something that I've practiced so many times, a new way of thinking that path almost is really slow. I hear what you're saying. It doesn't connect for me personally. And I think it goes back to one of the things that when we first spoke, Zach, it was around confidence and self-confidence, and it's understanding the distinction between the two, and then people relate to that or they won't. But if I look at imposter syndrome, for me that's appeared loads and loads of times, from early military career to my latter military career with special forces, never quite feeling good enough, I don't fit in, I'm the odd one out, to go into the security industry. And again, I was working with some absolutely incredible people, similar sort of thoughts and feelings, to retraining, becoming a personal trainer and strength coach in Barcelona in Spain. So having to speak my second and third languages at the latter end of 30s, early 40s, I never felt like such an imposter. But it really, yeah, I guess we'll touch on that when we come to confidence, self-confidence, is about where my focus is going. So yeah, it's something that I've experienced, and for other people it's a process, it's a journey, one small step at a time. It's learning where our attention goes and where would we be better placed putting that attention. Usually when it's imposter syndrome, it's back on us. I'm feeling this, they're thinking that. It's a big story which is creating a monster in our own heads, and really that's only a small part of the reality. There's a lot more that we can look up and see or focus on.
It was making me think then, as you were saying that, so if a lot of these biases and things that we've got that are kind of hardwired into us are rooted back to when we were living in tribes and things like that, I imagine in your career in the special forces, you're part of a tribe that's really relying on each other for performance and survival and things. Not feeling good enough in certain moments could potentially be seen as a good thing to keep you alert and awake. So is there a way to kind of even reframe the dialogue around it?
Yeah, exactly. And that goes back to focus. So I think one of the clearest example for me is something that I got to look at with my coach. So going back to what Jack was saying, I was lucky enough to get coached before the storm came. I was at home or in the shops buying umbrellas when I got the opportunity to really look at myself and get asked some really challenging questions by my coach, a lad called Johnny Bevan, which is an incredible opportunity. So there, I was working in the gym at the time. And so I can remember doing sales calls, which I know is something you talk about a bit on your podcast. And it was a tragic comedy if you were a camera watching that conversation. But I really remember the visceral feeling inside of myself and the internal dialogue. I wasn't focused on them and how I could serve them in terms of personal training or potentially providing a solution. It's all around my thoughts and feelings of I'm not good enough. They're judging me. I can't speak Spanish properly. They're not going to buy. It's obvious they're going to choose somebody else, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the major part of the narrative. So for me, it was to recognize later on, it was to recognize that, but then just gently park that. Yeah, okay, we'll deal with that. It's coming back to them. So the focus, well, how can I serve them? How might I be able to help or support them? What might they really need? Focus really. It's about where do I put my attention?
I was given this advice to one of our team the other day, and I sometimes find myself conflicting with myself because the analogy, and I love an analogy, Aaron, but I think of it as like, imagine a cat, right, in your brain, all that black matter around it, and the thought comes in saying you're not good enough, you've got imposter syndrome, and it's like a ball of string, and the cat just bats it away to just get all these thoughts out. But then actually I feel that it could also be quite dangerous advice to say think of nothing. Do you know what I mean? Because are we learning? Are we growing? So in those moments of crisis, and I'm sure that you can relate and bring in other experience, but I think a sales call is great when you're on that moment and you're thinking, are they thinking about me? Are they wondering why I've done my hair this way? Are they judging the way I'm speaking? Am I speaking all of these thoughts? How do you handle that crisis?
Yes, well, I think it's to accept that they're there, that they come up, and that thoughts – natural things that happen to us as humans. You know, you've got 60,000-70,000 thoughts a day. Trying to understand or control all of them is impossible. For me, I think of thinking as the river that flows by and we're on the bank. If we jump into that river of thought, yep, they're judging my hair or have I dressed well today, then we're fighting against the current. Whereas if we can choose to step out, sit on the bank and watch it go. Because thoughts, you know, feelings come from thoughts. Thoughts come from our interpretation of the world. And if we let that go, it's a 90-second chemical reaction within our body. But if we follow that thought, then that's sometimes when we can misguide or our focus gets redirected to, yep, our hair, our image, and all the other things that the cat suddenly wants to start batting away. So there is something interesting in that, though, and it is almost to earmark it and come back to those sorts of thoughts and feelings at an appropriate time for you. So fear around a sales call, if I go back to my example, because it's so visceral and something that I've called up so many times because there's so many learnings in it for me, what that imposter syndrome or that feeling of doubt or that the car crash sales call or conversation, sorry, because it's in person, really meant to me was, don't try and sell an Olympic weightlifting course, which I'm not qualified to instruct, to somebody who's probably looking just for a bit of motivation and a regular basic habit building routine to get them into the flow of fitness. So it's a reminder it's not something to bat away completely. I'll come back to that. So it's almost like, know my limits, know what I can teach, know what I can teach well, and stick to those for the moment.
The thoughts are useful. That's so powerful. And the river analogy, I love that one. And you've taken my cat analogy and smashed it out of the park. That.
It's, like, it's not mine. I robbed it from somebody else. And no, I can't you remember can, who.
We'll claim it. We'll give it you. I think that's so, so brilliant. And just letting the thoughts go past, but also learning from it and doing the self-work. I was saying, one of the things I will do is, and I don't know if you're the same, but I'll get into bed at night and I'll have a million thoughts racing in my head about work tomorrow, the business, whatever. And I'll say, right, what I'll do, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I'll write them down, but I'm not dealing with them now because now you need to kind of rest and recoup. So I've got like little systems in place. I'm a big fan of mantras and like little phrases or little quotes that can kind of get you to the point of building resilience, dealing. Have you got anything that's worked for you throughout your life?
Yeah, I think there's a few couple there's a few things that have worked for me quite well. But going back to your point, Jack, I think in terms of thoughts, it's practice. We can't expect to be a ninja black belt at processing our thoughts or feelings if it's the first day. So for me, it's all about awareness, and just that we can recognize them is a massive step. So I think I'd put that in there. But yeah, it goes back to beliefs for me. And everybody's got their own sort of beliefs that spur them on or give them a certain sense or feeling. But for me, it's like, I've got this, I'll be okay. So whether it's a sales call that absolutely dives, whether it's a difficult conversation with my partner about something, whether it's turning a client down or whatever it might be, it's, I'll be okay. And again, it's starting to link back into confidence and self-confidence. You know, whatever happens physically, this isn't going to change me. I'll just remind myself of that. It will feel horrendous in the moment, but those are normal human reactions to an anticipated threat. So for me, it's like, I'll be okay, I've got this.
I want to talk broadly, just while it's on top of mind, about emotions. So I'd imagine the journey you've been on, there are things that you think are true now about your own emotions and maybe the emotions of men in general that maybe pre-military or early military perhaps you didn't think were true. So what could you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think like most people, I wasn't taught anything about how to understand my emotions or how to regulate them or process them. And as a young man, and especially given my military background, yeah, what we did was we just push them down for lots of different reasons. Mainly, I think, because yeah, we weren't taught. So how do I deal with this? No, I can't see anybody physically experiencing that on the outside. I must be slightly different. There's no need to talk about it, type of thing. And there's nothing gone wrong there. There's nothing gone wrong. As that, you know, if you'd asked me how are you feeling before we got on this call, I'd have told you nervous, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'd like to be able to give you guys something valuable and your listeners something valuable, and that's the expectation of it. So there's nothing wrong with feeling nervous. It doesn't make me a nervous person. I'm just experiencing that. So yeah, there's loads. There's too many to pull on one right now, if I'm honest, Zach. But yeah, that has completely changed through, again, getting asked questions, learning to understand my own emotions, I think. So if we go back to my sales call, the fear that was around those, and even cold calls in second and third languages, I never grew to like it, but I just grew to accept it. You know, it's just something that I had to do. It's absolutely fine to feel a certain way about that. I prefer face to face, that I can relax a bit more, but get some feedback from the people. Notice if they look at them in the eye, or yeah, I haven't really answered your question there, mate. But
no, you have. We'll come out to Barcelona for part two. That's what I'll take
love
from
it,
that.
Love it.
We touched on confidence before, and I think even talking about imposter syndrome and things, I started this business in my bedroom, the one that me and Jack run together. Jack came in after singing on a cruise ship. He's got a very good voice. He might give you a tune later. But there's been many moments where we've been put in situations where actually you've got no prior evidence that you can actually do it. And I imagine in your career and then post-military going out and doing new things, there's been this feeling of, I'm trying to build this house of confidence to live in, but is it kind of secure enough at the foundations?
Yeah.
So what have you learned about that journey, about redefining yourself and about where to find that confidence and build that house?
Yeah. So I think for me, I'd make the distinction around confidence and self-confidence. So confidence is competence, as you've said, it's a byproduct, not a prerequisite. So if I've not done said task or had said conversation before, chances are I'm not going to feel confident. But there's the thing, I've learned that for myself and quite a few of my clients, you don't need to wait to feel confident, because that will come after. So self-confidence is the ability to do something well or be able to complete a task. And self-confidence is the ability to both understand myself and know that I will be okay. I will handle this. You know, that's my thing. I've got this type of belief. So we can try and impose that onto any situation. And I think the thing to remember here is that our brain is built for survival, and it's always thinking worst case scenario, and it can't distinguish between an uncomfortable conversation with our business partner and a saber-toothed tiger. It gives us the same emotional sort of response to help us try and avoid stepping into that conversation or confronting the tiger, or to turn and burn because it deems it as a threat. So it's to understand that, and for me, keep coming back to, yeah, I'll be okay. It's okay that it feels uncomfortable. This is a conversation with someone that I trust. We'll work it out. And it is to find our own beliefs around certain situations and look at past situations where we've had the self-confidence. But it's a process, it's a journey. It's not something that we read a book on and then tick that off, done, onto the next. It's a continual growth. You know, if we're dealing with 10 clients, yeah, we're good. We know how to do that. We're making a certain amount of money or not. And if that jumps to 50, then suddenly that can feel massive. And we'll grow into that, I guess.
And then the self-confidence, Aaron, go a little bit deeper on that. So for people that don't have, for people that would maybe dub themselves as not having self-confidence, how do you build that? Because I'm guessing it's not something you're born with, but it's probably something that you're kind of is curated throughout childhood.
Do you know what? I think we probably are born, and I've got no evidence to back this, but I think so much of society conditions us, you know, to stay in line, behave, don't talk out, yeah, talk when you're talked to, you know, follow these rules. You can't do this until so many hand-me-down beliefs and sayings that we probably, you know, suppress that, some of us, that natural self-confidence. So I do think it's there in most of us, but it has to be practiced. And I think it's a knowing of ourselves and an understanding of ourselves. So that can come in many shapes and forms. For some people, that might be speaking about difficult and challenging things. Some people might be journaling. Some people, it might be meditation. It's learning to connect to what's really going on within inside ourselves. But some ways to learn into that or lean into that or to grow it, I might suggest, is to recognize, like I said, we don't necessarily need to feel confident, but we do need to recognize we need to be courageous. So that's not doing something without any fear. It's doing it in spite of fear. Fear is there to serve us. We just don't make it our master. If we're going to, so I don't know, let's put an example of a new business opportunity that's slightly outside of our comfort zone. Great, we'll learn something from that. It's to look for new opportunities that are right on the edge of our comfort level and just gently lean in. So it's almost to seek discomfort. It would be to reassess once we've lent in, what have we learnt? And it's not, the outcome doesn't define us. So whether we win, lose or draw, we're still Aaron, or you're still Jack, or you're still Zach. We've still got our roles and responsibilities, and life goes on. It keeps spinning. What did I learn? What might I try differently next time? Yeah, and perspective, I think. So the ability to zoom out. If we go back to your example, Jack, of the sales call and people's hair, my hair, are people judging it? Probably not. Or if they are, it's for a split second, and then they're worried about what's on the new series they're going to watch on Netflix, or the argument they've had with their partner, or that bloke's hair is rubbish as well. Do you know what I mean? They've got so much other noise in their head that they've probably already forgotten what we were talking about 5 minutes ago. So yeah, zooming out helps us see the world and all its complexities and beauty. So the ability to zoom out as well, I would suggest, is another tool. And maybe if I was going to throw one on there as well, support. So having people around us to gently challenge and support us when we are learning to build our self-confidence that have either done it or can nudge us along or hold us accountable as well, is something I think would be beneficial.
I love that. That feels like the makings of a great framework in building confidence. One of the things that we do with some of our team, there's a YouTube video where it zooms out of Google Maps for 10 minutes and you go, and that's you and your problem right there, that little dot there. So it's just perspective. We're a big fan, and you were kind of alluding to it, and I definitely kind of want to maybe go down that path a little bit more, because the me and Zach were actually having the conversation about confidence and competence this morning on his commute in. I'm a big fan of like low stakes environments. So like, where can I build self-confidence without, so I lack self-confidence. Should I go and start a business? Probably not. Maybe the first step, like you say, rather than buying a £5,000 ice bath, you should probably just get into cold natural water on a Sunday morning and see if you like it. So what are some of the, if I'm somebody that sits there and I'm thinking, right, out of 10, I'm 3 out of 10 self-confidence. I know I need to build that. What are some of the low stakes things that people can do to start stacking that confidence?
I think a question I would ask them is, what are you avoiding? And it's usually probably a good clue as to something that you don't want to do for lots of different reasons, whether you're aware of it or not. So that might be an interesting place to start, because if I think to my own little list, it's a project or a conversation, you know, so I don't want the project to be judged or fail. So I'm making it fail by not giving it attention. I don't want a conversation to be difficult. The longer I leave it, more difficult it gets, type of thing. So what am I avoiding is usually a great place to start. I think it'll give us a lot of clues.
I think one of the things that'd be interesting to touch on with you while we've got you is, there'll be people who their lack of confidence might come from, they're part of a team that they don't quite find their place in. They're leading a team that they're not quite sure if they're leading it the right way. So it'd be interesting to just hear your perspective on what makes a good team and how you can make sure you're all working as one.
Yeah, I think the thing that jumps straight out at me is communication. And for me, if I look back to some of the leaders that I've had in the military and post-military, it's not that they had all the answers, that they were able to communicate and connect with us, not always inspire us to do the work, but, you know, help us understand what our position and place was. And they were the glue between those individuals. So I think one of my biggest things is, yeah, just to keep it so simple, really back to basics. So I think rather than give a massive framework, I think that would be an awesome place to start. Communication and connection. And I might suggest as well, that if there is a leader listening, that they turn that back in on themselves. So yeah, am I giving myself the time and space to connect and communicate to myself? And again, it doesn't have to be 3-hour morning routines that start at stupid o'clock. It can be, am I offloading my own thoughts and worries to paper or to somebody that I care about who can help me? I don't think we can do for other people what we can't do for ourselves, or it's very, very limited capacity. So I'd suggest that as a start point, communication with themselves, connection to themselves, and then their team. I think most teams between them have got the answers and can work it out. And if they feel involved and connected, they're much more likely to offer up ideas or suggestions. If the leader's got all the answers or wants to be seen as giving all the answers, people are probably going to hold their answers back because they get shot down or brushed aside anyway.
Was that a journey for you, or were you always quite naturally someone who found their place in the team?
That's a good question. I never liked to be in the spotlight, and I still don't. That's why I still struggle sometimes doing these podcasts, despite having my own one. I was really blessed as a kid in terms of being encouraged to do things. And it was recognized both by teachers and parents and my parents that, you know, I had an ability to relate to people. I think I just was able to listen to them or connect to them, see them for what they are, rather than what they are. In my career, it's always been easy to slot into a team. I was quite adaptable. I also think I went to the extreme and conformed completely. So if everybody was wearing black and I wanted to wear red, then you bet your bottom dollar the next day I'll be wearing black, type of thing. I think I went to the extreme in my character, but that is definitely a trait that I recognize throughout my career and life.
Me and Zach were very lucky at the back end of the year to have quite a lot of time off, and one of the words that definitely has been thrown around so much since we started the business was burnout. And I think that me and Zach got to the end of December and we felt, actually, We're feeling it now. It's been a tough year. Even on the weekend, it's very hard to switch off because you're constantly thinking about what's going on, what do I have to do next week? You're running a million miles a minute. So I have my own processes, and so does Zach, in terms of like de-stressing. But for people that might have crazy extreme lives, or they've got extreme meetings or back-to-back sales calls, how would you de-stress? What is your kind of process of actually, that's been a testing moment, now I need to get back and recuperate? How do you get back there?
Yeah, so I think for me there's two sort of ways to go here. First of all is the driver. Why am I so driven to make this business work? What is it I'm trying to achieve? How else might I achieve that emotionally without necessarily in the business? You know, does it actually matter if we make that bit much more or bit much less? So it's to try and understand my drivers or their drivers or their whys is a big part of that. And I think, again, I'd ask, what is it I love to do? How can I start to inject small amounts of that into my day, or if that's not possible, week, if that's not possible, month. So for me, it's I feel most free and alive when I'm in the mountains, especially when I'm on my mountain bike. So yeah, here's a confession. So my wheel has been broken, and I've been putting off buying a new one for quite a while. It came the other day. That will be on Friday, and I'll be riding. I'll send you a photo of that if you want, to keep myself accountable. But that's what I love to do. So I might not be able to go mountain biking every single day, but how can I get slightly closer to nature, which is what I love as well, slightly more often? If I've got extreme back-to-back sales calls, that, yeah, getting into the mountains might be a struggle. But what if that looks like fresh air in the morning for 10 minutes rather than doom scrolling for an hour at night? Yeah, so it's not always what more can I add? What can I take away to give myself that time to, yeah, do a little bit more of what I love to do? Yeah, I think I'll do that.
So if when you're coaching people and you're trying to, the first part of what you were saying, yeah, please do send us your mountain bike picture as well. I look forward to that. but when you're, why are they driving so hard? Why do they want to make that bit of money? How do you get people to, I guess, understand themselves to work out whether they are chasing, whether they're being dragged? When you're working with people, how do you get them to open up?
Yeah, it's not my job to get them to open up. I think they'll open up when they're ready, and sometimes that's with me and great, and sometimes that's not, and as painful as that is, that's okay. Not every coach is for every person, so there's a connection theme there. But it's just to really, so my perspective, I some of my values are courage and compassion. So I'll ask quite difficult questions, but from a very compassionate place. And it won't be the first time I'm having these conversations. So they'll be building up, and it's just helping them lift their perspective. And it's up to them to decide whether this thing's serving them or not. It's up to them to decide whether they like this lifestyle or pace of life or not. And what are some practical things we might be able to put in place as well? What else could we bring in, or how might we turn the intensity down from a 10 to an 8? What answers have you already got for yourself? What might you be avoiding, etc.? So it's lots and lots of questions. There's no judgment from me. I don't hold the answers. I'm not meant to. It's about creating primarily the space for myself so that I can sit in front of you without any judgments, so that you can create that space, or we can create that space for you. So lots and lots of questions to peel back the layers of what's underneath, what makes Jack Jack.
I really like that idea that you just said then around if you feel like you need more, so it might be from a business perspective, why do you feel like you need more? And can that be met somewhere else, or where isn't that being met? I think that's a really good question to be asking ourselves. Do you think that's kind of the starting point for if someone's got to the end of this conversation, they're considering reaching out to you? Is that the first question to ask?
It could be. It will be for some people. It won't be for others. It'll be, how can you help me? But I think, here's the thing. I think we'll never get enough of what we don't need. So I was seeking external validation with the things I'd done through Royal Marines. That's probably not good enough. You know, if I look back, that's probably what was going on. I need the next thing. I need more validation. So Special Forces, didn't really find it there because you're not really allowed to go out and talk about it. Tied in with the imposter thing, left the military because I felt I was being called to something else. I went to Ironman triathlon racing and mountain bike racing and didn't find it there. Funny old thing, you know. So I could have gone on that cycle or that journey for the rest of my life. And here's the thing, most people would have celebrated and rewarded me for that in some way, shape or form. Well, that's incredible, or I couldn't do that, blah, blah, blah. But it's not what I needed. I needed to learn to validate myself, be okay with myself, remind myself I've got this, even if the sales call is a car crash, the next one won't be, or I've taken one thing from that. My focus is on the people that are sat in front of me and their desperate need to try and be healthy because their lives might depend on it. That's a very different focus to how can I make another sale for me? How can I get acknowledgement from my boss or wife or get the new watch, you know? So yeah, and it's a process. It's a process.
There's a bit of a cliche question to follow here, but you're probably the best person to ask this to. The journey that you've been on, if you could go back to Aaron at 18, what advice would you give yourself then based on this journey that you've been on and what you know now?
Yeah, so I wouldn't change any of my experiences. I wouldn't have changed any of the mistakes, the highs or the lows. I would just gently remind myself I'm enough. You know, it's like a hug, and it sounds quite weak to those that might not be able to understand this concept yet. But as fathers, we probably already can start to hold it. It's you're enough, you're okay. You know, it's that unconditional love for ourselves. And here's the thing, it's not always easy, it's not always gentle, it's not always overt, but it can be. Yeah. I love myself enough not to have those 5 pints of beer for breakfast rather than half the liter of water type of thing, you know? Because I love myself enough to let go of this problem or that person in my life, despite the pain or the difficulty or the emotional stuff that come around that. So yeah, I really think of it as like that. So I think it would be that. It would be a gentle hug from 45-year-old Aaron to 18-year-old Aaron and say, yeah, you've got quite an adventure, but you're enough. You don't have to do this for anyone else but yourself.
I absolutely love that. I feel like there's been so many brilliant takeaways from this conversation. I always like to get one last question in before we let you go. I guess what have been the books that have changed your life?
Oh, wow. I'm going to look. You can't see it, but I have many leather-bound books behind me. My office smells of rich mahogany. Name the film.
We know.
Anchorman?
we know that one.
There we go.
Yeah. Key Person of Influence is one that jumps out at me by Daniel Priestley. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. It can be a bit deep at first. Great Expectations by Charles Dickens. I've got really fond memories of reading that book in the desert twice. There's an author called... No, I'll leave it at that. So those three. So for very different books for very different reasons. There's some practical stuff in there. There's some mindset stuff in there. And there's also some good old fashioned English literature in there as well. So yeah, there are three books that I'll probably read again and again.
Good choices. Good choices. If people want to check you out, if they want to work with you, how should they be finding you, listening to you, getting in contact with you?
Yeah. So LinkedIn's probably the best place. Aaron Hill at Synergy Coaching Solutions. I have got an Instagram account as well. So I'll give you the guys the link to that. And I've got my own little podcast as well, Forging Resilience. So those are probably the three places to, as touch points, as we'd say. And LinkedIn is probably the best place through the messages there.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I've loved this conversation. Some incredible analogies that I'll be thinking about on my commute home this evening and pondering and questioning. So thank you. Thank you
no
for
worries.
Joining us.
Absolute pleasure. So thanks to you guys for creating that space and asking those questions and helping peel back the layers on me. So thank you guys for creating it.
No worries.